This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by a really interesting guest, someone who works in health information networks and has worked in the Obama White House, Claudia Williams. Claudia, we're going to ask you a number of questions. Can you take a moment and introduce yourself to the audience?
I'm Claudia Williams. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of ManifestMedX. We're California's health data network, connecting healthcare providers, plans, and hospitals across the state to improve care, enhance health, and lower costs. And personally, I'm hell-bent on unlocking health data and came to California from the Obama White House to continue the important work of really liberating data in a secure and collaborative way so that we can get to our goals of advancing value-based care and patient experience and improving health.
Thank you. And explain this for a moment, and I want to show some follow-up questions on this. What do health information networks / exchanges, what do they actually do for those that are of us that are not tech savvy?
Sure. So, you know, the average patient goes to multiple doctors and hospitals, and if you're sick, that number, of course, is going to be multiplied by many. For a very sick patient, you might be seeing scores of different doctors over the course of several years. So what we do is bring together all of that diverse information to provide a full picture of patients' health. HIEs, or health information networks like ManifestMedX, are now supporting data sharing for 92 million Americans, according to a recent survey put out by the Trade Association. And I guess, you know, in the past, I think we were seen as organizations that kind of move data from one place to another. But really, when you look at the expansive data sharing that's starting to occur, the urgent issue now is to really manage and make sense of the sheer volume of data that's coming in. So HIEs are no longer the movers of the data only. We are the data cultivators. So what does that look like? So we combine claims and clinical data to provide insights to overwhelmed care teams. So imagine, for instance, you're in the emergency department, a patient comes in, we are integrating through a Smart on Fire app, so a simple app in the EHR, that community record that lets the doctor look and see, oh, the patient's on this med, I should be careful in prescribing. We also pull all that data together in a set of analytics tools, so I could quickly, in it with just a couple clicks, sort through all of my patients and figure out who's at highest risk of readmission. Or if I'm an ambulatory provider, MX would provide an alert when your patient's seen in the hospital. So increasingly, we're seeing our job as like knowing what people need and when they need it and inserting it in very smart ways as insights into workflow.
Thank you. And then a couple additional questions. ManifestMedX, how did you become CEO of it? Did you found it? When was it founded? How did it get started?
Sure. So we were founded in 2017, and I was brought in. It was founded from the merger of two other organizations with similar missions, and I was brought in to be the founding CEO coming out of my stint in the Obama White House. So I joined in the early part of 2017, and over the last 3 years, we've grown. We now share records for 19 million Californians. We're one of the only networks of our sort across the country that brings together claims and clinical data, and also one of the few that are HITRUST certified. So that's the kind of gold standard for security credentialing of networks of our type. And we connect 7 plans, 90 hospitals, and over 500 participants, provider participants.
Fascinating. And is it a for-profit or not-for-profit?
Oh, yeah, I should have said that. We're non-for-profit. We're a 501c3. So we have a governing board made up of the various stakeholders. We exist for the public benefit, and our job is really to unlock data in California.
Fascinating. And how do, as the big data companies, the Apples, the Googles, the Amazons, as they try and sort of change how the medical record is captured, who owns it, and the world slightly pivots away from Epic and Cerner, though they're still so critical and such a huge platform for everything. How do those big technology companies view a party like you that's one of these huge information networks that's not for profit? How do they view that? How do those spaces fit together?
So I think we're in a really interesting place where we are going to all need the power and the technology of the Googles and the Amazons and the Microsofts to actually leverage data in the way it needs to be leveraged to improve care. But remember, and we can talk about patients later, but when we're talking about providers and plans, they all operate under HIPAA. So they are the covered entity. They're the ones who safeguard the data. And they're partnering with those companies as business associates, as extensions of their own work. So we can certainly fit in, let's say a large system comes to us and says, we want to figure out how to use AI for oncology. I think our job is really to help provide records to that provider. And if they choose to share that data with an Amazon or a Microsoft, it makes the job of that company so much less onerous in going out and collecting all that data. But it's important to remember, we're still operating under the rules of HIPAA. So even recently when there was that kind of news about Google and other news about Amazon, they are obliged to only use data in the manner allowed by HIPAA. So you can't sell identifiable data, right? I mean, you could sell the identified data, but not identifiable. So it's important to remember that those big partners, they don't have like a free reign that's different. They have to fit within the frameworks that exist. And I think we have an important role to reduce the effort and burden of actually bringing technology and algorithms to bear on health data to improve healthcare. But typically we wouldn't be contracting directly with those large tech companies, if that makes sense.
No, understood. But it's fascinating to see how all these parts fit together. And then there's increasingly all these other for-profit efforts, whether it's artificial intelligence entities, IBM Watson, Qventus, it does predictive analytics, all kinds of different companies that are trying to touch the data in different ways, still mired with all kinds of interoperability concerns of data coming back and forth from lots of different providers that are affiliated and unaffiliated. So sort of a fascinating world. Let me ask you another question. You have this fascinating perspective of having worked in the Obama White House, being CEO of a huge data exchange now, information network. What's the one or two most interesting issues you see today in healthcare? And what do you personally find so interesting today?
So I really think today we have a shot at fixing the really broken things, right? The opioid crisis, the community to prison pipeline, faster development of treatments and cures. Like, so this potential is extraordinary. And data has a critical role in getting there, but I don't think that our previous behaviors of competing over data is going to get us to the future we all want. And so this has really come into play in the last week or two around the letter that Epic famously put out, right, saying we and all of these hospitals disagree with making APIs available to patients. And the way I would sum it up is that, you know, the legacy healthcare organizations have seen themselves as the guardians of the data. They even describe it as their data. They sometimes bring IP lawyers to the negotiation table when we talk to them. So they view this as a competitive asset that they've collected. And so I think often they don't benefit from the kind of broad scale, secure data sharing, even covered by HIPAA, that we are going to want and need. So I think we're going to have a lot of discomfort. Some of that, I think, stems from real privacy concerns. Much of it stems from real business interests. And I think the ones that are going to really thrive in this ecosystem are those that are going to figure out a way to open up data and not feel like the only way to protect their business interests is to hoard it and keep it behind locked walls.
That's a fascinating observation. And I'm so thrilled, quite frankly, at your ability to avoid taking this into a partisan direction and more into the direction of here are the real problems we face. Here's why data is so critical to solving those in the long run. And so thank you. But the fascinating observation is when you look at the world of investment today, the whole world of investment has moved towards the value is in who has the data and in sort of information services and data. And so it's interesting as the investment world has moved towards wanting to value those so heavily that naturally you see this territorialness in the healthcare world over the asset being, well, our big asset is we control this data that our competitors, CVS, Walmart, Walgreens don't control, or that Amazon or Apple or Google's trying to get. but we as a health system still control it. And you see how from a system perspective, you know, many of us think, no, really, it's the patient's data, not your data. But it's fascinating how you have those real territorial turf business concerns impact the ability to do certain things with AI and accelerating some of these treatments that you want to, make more easy to accelerate. Is that a fair perspective, Claudia?
It is. And I think the other, you know, if there was one thing I could do that would help us get over this middle ground, right, it would be faster movement towards value-based payments for hospitals. Because if I'm an APM, if I'm an organization that's actually taking risk at scale, like let's say 50% of my patients are at risk, suddenly being able to with fluidity and liquidity share data becomes completely core to my enterprise. If I'm in a world still of fee-for-service medicine, that does not exist, right? So these worlds of data sharing and movement towards new business models are incredibly tightly combined. And I think, you know, for instance, the Governor Newsom just put out a new proposal that the state is going to track healthcare spending by hospital, and if the cost trends exceeds a target, there are going to be penalties. Well, I'm super curious. I think that will do a lot to free up the kind of data sharing that we need, because suddenly the dollars are going to lie on the side of coordinating care, not lie on the side of putting another human in a bed, right? And so those things are it's incredible. And I also think, you know, the federal information blocking regulation, which is to be finalized soon, hopefully, flips all of this on its head, because it says the HIPAA world said, you may share this data, but you can always say, yeah, I don't want to. What information blocking says is, unless there's a legal reason you can't, you have to. And so if it goes through as proposed, it's going to blow up all of these protective legacy kinds of approaches to data hoarding.
Fascinating. What a fascinating perspective, and thank you. Another issue, Claudia, working in the Obama White House, just talk about two or three of the most interesting things in that experience and so forth.
Sure. Well, one I would bring up is about a year and a half before I left, we started getting calls from various quarters, from the president's office, from Francis Collins' office. And I don't know if you know this, but one of the bills that President Obama wrote as a senator was on precision medicine. And he was reading, he was talking to people in Silicon Valley, and he was starting to get really interested and a little frustrated that we weren't doing more to enable a future where cures could be developed at scale, where precision medicine could operate in every, you know, in every clinic, where we could actually bring to bear the power of data for the treatment of patients. And so he put us a challenge. He said, tell me what it is we can do in the time before we leave the White House to make a vast difference in this world. And so out of that was born what is now called the All of Us Research Initiative. And the proposition is, how would you take a large longitudinal cohort like we had for the Framingham study that has produced a lot of the new drugs that are the most exciting in the world today, right? The discoveries from that study. And how do you bring that into the 21st century? And so the All of Us research effort is, the idea is to build a 1 million-person research cohort, including clinical data, claims data, genomics data, wearables data, but also to break the kind of control that traditional scientists and researchers have over data. So very similar to what we're doing in California, and make this data set open to any scientist that has a valid reason to use it. So that effort was born out of that. Eric Dishman led it up until very recently. They're enrolling subjects. And really this concept of how do you create an open data platform that's secure, but that isn't bound by the restrictions of a particular organization. So you can see the extraordinary parallels between that and what we're doing in California. Interestingly, there was some point where President Obama's team said, guys, listen, you got to stop having meetings on precision medicine because the president has other important things to focus on. So he was just like, a, you know, extraordinary data geek. He really believed and in the power of science. In his office, he held some of the original models for various patents and trademarks. And so, I'm just really excited about the fact that he spent his executive energy and, you know, supported us to build this extraordinary new effort, which is now underway at the NIH, and has been, you know, deeply supported by Congress and even by this administration. It was just a really, and I think what we did is then go out and took the principles of that work and inspired private sector commitments to build from those principles. One of those commitments was the commitment of several large EHR vendors to what we call Sync for Science, so to open up APIs to patients that wanted to donate their data for the All of Us research effort. And so this kind of inside outside, you're both building a thing that you hope will achieve your goals, but you're also engaging the world around the vision that you have and inviting additional participation in that vision. So that's one example. I can give another, but that means...
No, it's fascinating. It really is. It's a fascinating perspective. It's a fascinating perspective in what you're doing now, how it intertwines with the political world, how it intersects with the established health system world, and how much they're trying to do with the challenges they face, the Epics, the Cerners, as well as, sort of Judy Faulkner's and Epics' position on it, as well as sort of the big tech companies. It's a fascinating perspective, and thank you. How do people learn more about you and the not-for-profit company that you lead? How do people learn more about Manifest Medics?
So, of course, our website, which is manifestmedics.org, but I'd also love to hear from your listeners directly, and they can reach me at claudia.williams@manifestmedics.org. In addition, my Gmail is on LinkedIn, if that's the easier way to go there. So I always love hearing from people directly, especially folks that are in California and want to join in this exciting effort.
Well, thank you very, very much, Claudia, for joining us. Just fascinating what you're doing and what a great articulate position and speaker on it. Just magnificent. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.